Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world. Welcome back to the Center for Internet Security's podcast series, Cybersecurity Where You Are, where we take on some relevant current topics and try to make sense of them, try to explain them to cybersecurity for the rest of us is our goal. So we have a really fascinating episode here today, and part of the story of why we're doing this. One of the job responsibilities I have at CIS is the honor of chairing the Alan Paller Laureate Program. And for those of you that don't know that name, Alan Paller, well, if you're in cybersecurity, you need to know that name. Alan was a legend in this business, the founder of the SANS Institute, a national advocate for all kinds of causes, especially workforce issues, and also one of the key founders of the Center for Internet Security. And we are celebrating our founding 25 years ago, thanks to the vision of folks like Alan. So when Alan passed a few years ago, the board opted to set aside some funding and create this Alan Paller Laureate Program and asked me to operate it on behalf of the company. It's really truly a great honor. Alan was a great technologist, businessman, but also a friend and colleague for many years. So we're really honored to be able to sponsor some of the work, some of the ideas that he championed, and sort of operate in the spirit of what would Alan do in a situation like this. So great episode and a great topic and something that's really personal for us at CIS. Let me take a moment to introduce our two guests today. First up, Amelia Gifford of CIS, who has the privilege and also the work of actually making this board successful. Amelia, could you give the audience a little bit of background of where you come from and what you do here at CIS?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Tony. And hello, everybody. As Tony mentioned, I serve as the board secretary for the Alan Paller Laureate Program. And it truly is an honor. Alan was passionate about making cybersecurity practical, accessible, and especially for communities that are often overlooked. And it's really fun to see him live on, right, in that spirit. The program supports projects that are reflect his values, their real world impact, innovation, and service to the public good. And a little bit about the program. So it launched in 2023 to honor the legacy of Alan. And since its launch, we've seen about 50, a little shy of 60 proposals. And each year we're seeing a more diverse and mission-driven proposals showing how the program is both maturing and expanding its reach.
Yeah, thanks, Amelia. Yeah, great background and appreciate all the work that you do to make it successful. It's really gratifying, as you said, to see the kinds of ideas that come in and the depth of thinking and the attempts to really adhere to the spirit that that Alan brought to all of us here at CIS. And our second guest today, George Bailey. George, please introduce yourself to our audience and sort of why we have you here today.
Good morning, Tony. Thank you. And thank you for having me on the podcast. My name is George Bailey. I'm a director of CyberTap here at Purdue University. CyberTap is a business unit of our technical assistance program. Purdue is a land-grant university, and you know, one of the missions of the university is to give back to the state of Indiana. And the way that my department does that is providing either free, low cost. You know, we really stink at capitalism, so we like to give our services away. But a lot of boutique cybersecurity services to the underserved communities. So we serve healthcare, local government, K-12, mom and pops, the defense industrial base. If you're underserved and you're in Indiana, we want to help you. That's kind of what we've been doing. So I've been in this role since 2011. That's about when I came here from a cyber practitioner role to be a consultant, essentially. Didn't know anything about consultation, but I learned how to do it and been loving it ever since.
Wow, great background. And you are obviously a kindred spirit of CIS, George.
Oh, I'm a CIS fanboy.
Well, you know, employee number one, I had the honor of meeting Clint Kreitner, employee number one of CIS. And he was on his fourth career or something like that by the time he came to CIS. And I remember after the first few months, he turned to me during the meeting and said, Tony, I've never run a business where I give my best product away for free. We're still trying to figure out how to make this work. So you understand that
At the same time, you know, when you look across our industry, right, you worked as a consultant and then role you're in now, the need is just astounding, overwhelming, pervasive. I mean, so much of our industry, somehow in this industry, we've created a business model that most of our economy cannot participate in. They cannot afford the services. They can't deal with the complexity. And that's really, you know, at the heart of what we do at CIS. And that's one of the things that we saw in your proposal that really appealed, I think, to the group. So, you know, looking for these enterprises that have been overlooked, frankly, by the industry, right? You know, they're not going to hire giant teams of security professionals. They're not going to spend money on expensive tools or create complex piles of data that no one will ever look at. I mean, it's just crazy how the way the industry works.
And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break.
Most organizations want to streamline their cybersecurity and compliance efforts.
It's just not always easy to do so on your own.
That's where a CIS Secure Suite membership can help.
It provides benefits, tools, and resources designed to help you implement the CIS critical security controls and CIS benchmarks.
Secure Suite can help you strengthen your cyber defenses, comply with common standards, and cybersecurity frameworks, all while saving you time, money, and effort.
Apply for membership today by visiting cisecurity.org.
Start secure and stay secure with CIS Secure Suite.
Thank you, and let's jump back into the episode.
But let's talk a little bit, George, about your application. You know, what was attractive about the program that we've run here, and sort of how did you think and frame the work that you were doing to appeal to the things that we asked for?
So, you know, as a soft funded organization, you know, we seek sponsorship from all sorts of different funding agencies. And when this opportunity first popped up 3 years ago, I was like, I loved it, right? Because the mission speaks to us. Helping those who can't help themselves is really what we strive for. So 3 years ago, I proposed a very similar program, but a different population. And then last year, it was more of a partnership to build out more technical assistance programs across the states, right? So there's lots of land grant universities, lots of capacity. Particularly if you start to think about using student talent. We don't use student talent in our professional services, but a lot of universities do. But they don't have the methodologies and they don't have the tooling and how do they stand up a technical assistance program to help organizations in cyber issues. But this year, we have this idea of helping rural electricity cooperatives across the nation. And, you know, we need to start in our backyard first. There's 32 rural electricity co-ops in Indiana. Most U.S. citizens get their power from a rural electricity distributor. And we flip those lights on every morning, and we take for granted kind of what it takes to keep those lights on. And the OT and ICS environments are highly vulnerable, right? They're most of them in legacy environments. And these environments do not have mature cyber programs. Many of them don't have full-fledged IT people, right? They outsource their enterprise IT to a local MSP or an IT integrator and hope for the best. So when you think about the critical controls that CIS maintain, it's a great maturity framework, right? We can start them in IG1, implementation group one. And as they progress, you know, their maturity improves. So we thought, let's build out a program that would basically provide them, you know, fractional CISO or virtual CISO, whatever the marketing term you want to use. But basically, you know, they get an analyst who is intimately familiar with the controls, who's intimately familiar with the tooling, right? The SysCat Pro, the Pro Assessor, the CSAT, right? So that we can stand them up an instance so that we can come and help them. So we use a three-prong approach in all of our assessments, right? There's an interview. We'll come in and whoever their stakeholders are, we interview them. We want to learn about their policies, their procedures, their operating practices, right? Their mission, right? What do they even get a sense of how vulnerable they are? Do they have an awareness of who they're, what their threats are? And then we do some technical evaluation, right? So we'll do some benchmarking of their environment using SysCat Pro. We'll also do some vulnerability scanning using a non-CIS tool set. And then we come all that back and we start giving them a roadmap on how to You know, if there are any gaps in IG1 controls, we start there first, and then we try to progress them along as far as they're willing to go. In another project, we looked at the controls, and we even kind of down selected, right? So we call it IG0. Transitive 12 is what we call it, right? So there are 12 version 8.1 critical controls that are proven to be the most impactful. CIS already does a fantastic job of prioritizing the controls. We just took that one step further, right? So those 12 controls are probably the ones that we'll focus on first before we get them to IG1, right? Things like, do you have an asset inventory? Are you doing MFA on external admin network, you know? Just the truly foundational things. And if you do these things, you will improve your cyber posture, right? So the program will help us support 25 organizations of those 32, and we hope to just self-fund the rest of the group.
Yeah, George, I think that was, you know, the way you described it, you know, as one of the voters on the board, that's what I thought was particularly appealing, the sort of thinking through the whole life cycle. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I'm close to 50 years now in cybersecurity. I cannot count how many good ideas disappear because great ideas don't implement themselves. You have to have methodology, right? You have to have tooling. You have to have repeatability. You know, you have to have an ongoing process. And so most of our challenges are really around execution. It's not about creating a new idea that no one's ever thought of. So the reuse
of the tools.
Yeah. And hey, I said, frameworks, you know, must be great because we have so many of them. I mean, it's almost scary. And you probably noticed, I'm sure you've noticed, right? Near as I can tell, the only framework creator that goes way out of their way to cross map to everybody else's framework. And we don't do that because that's the right answer. We do that because people have to live with a gazillion frameworks, whether they like it or not. And so what can we do to make it easier is to, you know, is to present ways to say, well, if you do this in CIS talk, it means this in this CSF or in ISO or in, you know, other frameworks. So.
And I appreciate you doing that because, you know, when we help healthcare orgs, of course, they are interested in the security rule, the HIPAA security rule, and having a CIS critical control mapping to HIPAA makes that translation easier for them.
You know, I think you've nailed it. So it's this sort of comprehensiveness, the thinking through the life cycle, I think really appealed to the board. Amelia is also someone who's plowed through many, many of these applications. Any thoughts on the, without revealing any inside baseball here, any thoughts on what you saw in CyberTap and George's proposal?
Yeah, I mean, definitely a mission driven, right? It truly aligns to the mission of CIS, right? Helping the underserved and really with a focus on communities. So really liked that as well. And then you had a plan for after, like what's going to happen after? How is this going to be sustained, right? So really enjoyed that as well. How are you going to measure the success? Like, is there the success of implementing this, right? So you have a virtual CISO, they start here today, and then next year they're here. Is there a plan behind that, or do you have any data to support that?
We don't have any data yet. Looking at some of the reassessment activity we've done for other populations, it's really, have they kept the program going, right? So there's a few controls that aren't CIS related that we'll focus on, and those are governance, right? So leadership, budget, accountability, right? So some of the key parts of the VCSO is to not only be their accountability partner, but to educate them and to evangelize that they appoint someone internally who, you know, after this project is done, it just doesn't wither on the vine, right? So that program, you know, we'll plant those seeds for a program, but they need to continue to mature it and exercise it, if you will, live it. I think circling back around, you know, we will offer reassessment or some sort of touch point towards the end of the program. You know, we'll save some time at the end just to see how things are going. And in many cases, people will need some redirection, right? They would have lost traction. They may stumble over some technical issues, like, you know, how do we implement MFA when we have such a diverse device and user population? So, you know, we might have to level set and you know, get them back on track. But at the moment, I don't have a lot of data. at least on this population.
Yeah, and just to chime in there, George, thank you for answering that. One thing that I really admire about CIS, and I see a lot in this program, is CIS isn't saying telling someone what to do, right? It's a group of individuals that come together, a community that share best practices, right? And guidance, and that's exactly what your program is doing.
Yeah, well, and that's one of the reasons why we align a lot of our assessment work to the CIS controls, because you can pick a standard, really any standard will work, right? And knowing what to prioritize, knowing what's important as a safeguard, whether it's NIST-CSF, whether it's ISO, whether it's CIS, right? They're all going to give you reasonable direction, right? But CIS is the only one that really prioritizes them, right? HITRUST does a little bit, but that's not an open framework. So, you know, organizations have to pay for it, which is a barrier. So if you align yourself to the CIS and when those controls, right, when 8.2 comes out, right, we've already know where our roadmap needs to go, right? We've added a couple more controls to IG1. So let's look at those to mature our program. Otherwise, you're looking at these organizations, they don't have the internal subject matter expertise. So they won't know once they've implemented all the way through IG3, what's next, right? They're gonna wait, and then when that next version of the controls come out and things shuffle around, they're like, ah, we need to work on this safeguard now, right? So it's like having an expert in your pocket. So when those changes happen, you know what direction you need to take.
Yeah, I think you've caught the spirit of it, George. The the sort of community building that you talked about. It's driven by the observation of those of us that have been around a while and the experts that we are able to gather. And if we treat everybody as, everybody's a special snowflake, they got to go figure out, they got to read all this documentation, buy all these complex tools, subscribe to the right threat feeds, and then they'll know what to do. As near as I can tell, that doesn't work at any scale and never has in this industry. Most are, it's a complicated business and things are changing, technology, business use, attackers, regulatory requirements. And yet, one of our taglines at CIS is we all have more in common than we do different in cyberspace. So we ought to act like it, right? Which is it's actually powerful for everyone to start to move in the same direction along the same path. It doesn't mean everyone will be identical at the end or, one size will fits all. That's not a solution either. But I think one of the things I really appreciated about the proposal, George, was I'll call it from our view at CIS. Some said you're running a controlled experiment, right? With an important community of a manageable size, which you can, you have a plan to deliver a specific set of services over a particular set of time. And I think that gives us all a chance to learn together, right? So you're learning what that population is like. We're learning, what could we do to improve the content that we create from CIS? What are the things that we could do to help folks like you to scale up? So the population, as you said, is interesting. It's important, in that region, but it also gives us a chance to generate some data, to learn some lessons, to create feedback. Someone once asked me, what's the strategic plan for the controls? I said, I don't know. Tell me what your problems are. That's our strategic plan, right? Our goal is to solve your problem. So I think, and again, that came out in your proposal that have a methodology using pieces that make sense, but also feeding back, I think, to us, to your population, to the service that you do at CyberTap to help us all get better at it. And I think that was a very compelling part of the story that you have. So one of the things I'm working on, as I mentioned to you previously, Jordan, is that we're not like some gigantic foundation here at CIS, right? We're not writing massive checks. We're not the National Science Foundation, et cetera. When we make an investment, we're also building a relationship. So it's a chance for you to connect to other parts of CIS, the multi-state ISAC, the controls team. And this will be, I think, part of the sustainment that you're trying to achieve. That is connecting them both through you, your program, but also to us as the keepers of the multi-state ISAC, as the keepers of the controls. That connection, I think, is an important one. So, you get to act as kind of the aggregator of demand and of need and of services but you know, it also ties us in there. So I know that this is with many of the best applications that we've seen, I think Amelia would second this, but we can see there's a natural connection to something that sustains at CIS. And so I think that gives us a chance to provide reach to you there. So we look forward to it. Let's talk a little bit. So this is one of Amelia's passions here, is the reporting that we asked for, the progress reporting. And by design, just to let you know, probably clear, we want you to spend as much money as possible on work and a little bit on reporting to us, enough so that we know that we've made a good investment. I can go to the board with a straight face and say, you know, we're doing pretty good here. We're creating. So tell us about that. Well, actually, Amelia, any thoughts first on reporting and sort of what you're looking for as you collect reporting from George's team?
Yeah. So George, reporting will be due in about a year, and then at the second year follow up as well. But we try to keep it really simple, right? Just knowing that we don't want you to be anybody that's awarded the grant to be stuck in the weeds trying to come up with reporting, but we want to know how you're doing. And as Tony mentioned, huge on connections, right? And if you ask anybody who's Alan Powell or what should I know about Alan Powell, it was he makes those connections, right? So in the reporting, or even when we're talking to those that weren't awarded the grant, we really look for those connections. And then Tony or I will follow up and say, hey, you should be talking to so-and-so over here. Or just this morning, Tony was making a connection. So I think that's really, really powerful. And that's kind of what we look for in the reporting is how can we help you? Who can we connect you to? And again, really low level reporting in comparison to others.
Yeah, and it is comparative to some of our other sponsored work. You know, usually it's quarterly reports with an annual roll up, frequent budget reviews, right? There's a lot of administrative costs when you think about like federal grants. So this was quite pleasant actually. And I think the university, although I love them, probably made it more difficult than it had to be, just because it seemed to be so easy of a process. They were like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. What do you mean but it was, we got the two organizations together and they worked it out. So it was great.
Great. And I know Tony often will take the reporting that you share and we'll share it with the board, right? Because this program did evolve from the board in honor of Alan. So it's always good to feed back to them what's being done in his legacy.
Yeah, we're really anxious to get started. In the proposal, I think we laid it stated a July 1 as a start, but we're going to kick things off early June.
Fantastic.
And as Amelia said, if we get there, and it's crystal clear that the natural touch points with CIS that are part of your work. So in some sense, the reporting will be anticlimactic because we'll be tied together pretty closely. We'll have people working with you, contributing ideas, gathering feedback from you on products and so forth. And I think that would be, the best possible outcome. And we have done that, as Amelia said, with folks who did not receive a grant from us. It was just, oh, you know what? They weren't selected, but there's something important going on here. You know, that's actually very gratifying to see multiple good ideas. It's a little challenging for the voters, but it's exactly what we're trying to achieve with the program overall.
I'm glad our sense of mission resonated through the proposal because it is in everything that we do. So,
no, appreciate that. Mission driven is a way of life here, and we know we're not alone. This is about our economy, about our social lives, and so it's great that it's technically interesting and important work, and you can make a living at it. But at the end of the day, this is what our kids and grandkids will be dealing with, right? The world that they will inherit. Is really dependent upon this. Any other feedback, George, on the process itself? Because Amelia never lets us get away without lessons learned and doing process improvements before we forget about them in 1 year. And I will tell you, when she said she's ready for your reporting, Amelia doesn't forget dates either. So just be warned. But any other feedback on the process or things that?
No, it was painfully simple. This year was even easier than last year and the year before. Right. So this year there was a sort of a web application submission. Right. So a very simplistic web form. Basically, who are you? What do you want to do? What are the outcomes? What's the budget? And you know, when do you expect to get started? Ask some information about, your capabilities and your qualifications. Nothing that you wouldn't expect from any other grant submission. But it was all one single form. So, there wasn't a need to upload, organizational credit reports and all sorts of other things. So I would imagine there's a lot of back-end processing. I appreciate, Amelia, you guys working through that, because, trying to figure out, I'm sure you had lots of good ideas, and then trying to spend the money, in Alan's memory, you want to be good stewards of those funds. So I can appreciate the hard work you put into, selecting the candidates. So yeah, it was very simple. And then and from a university side, right, and this is probably very similar to other nonprofits that have mature grant processes, there was more work on internally than to actually apply for the program. Because I had to apply internally at the same time using our sponsored program system.
Well, that's fantastic feedback, Georgia. It is our MO to make it easy peasy on your end. And each year we are improving it and trying to make it both easier for you and for the board to review. Do you have any advice to organizations or individuals that might think of applying to the grant in the future?
So looking at some of the past awardees, I think impact to the community is probably important. So one of the things we plan on doing all throughout the start of this program is to share our results, right? There's no intellectual property, right? If there's any intellectual property, it's the controls themselves. How we assess organizations against those controls, that's not secret, right? So how we onboard organizations, how we, the rubrics that we use to determine if they've met controls, right? We're going to publish all that, right? Because we want every university or every able body who can help their own communities, whether it's electricity co-ops who we plan to target, it could be health departments in some other state, it could be local government, it could be K-12s, it could be anybody. So I think the goal, right, and to be in good spirits with Alan's legacy, is that they need to think about not doing work to make themselves sustainable. Sure, this grant's going to help us keep our lights on, and we appreciate that. But the end goal is to better the community and get those results out there and get that methodology out there. So if people, future candidates, they need to think about not only how they're going to help themselves and help their immediate demographics that they're going to be assisting in the program, but how are they going to assist the industry as a whole, right? And that was kind of the lens that I wrote the proposal through. And I think that would resonate well with the board.
Yeah, I think you hit it really a great point there, George. And I can tell you the way you framed it in your proposal did resonate with the board. The notion of documenting a methodology, making it available to the public. I think those are right in the spirit of what we're trying to do. And we, one of the areas that we're thinking about on process improvement is around the question of sustainability, because we get widely varying, some people take it more financially, right? Who's going to be the next sponsor or grantor? Some take it in a more abstract sense, or say, or they focus on the idea, but not so much on who's going to do something with the idea. But I think this notion of making it part of the community is an important idea, and one that resonates with us at CIS. In fact, I can maybe a topic for another day, but some of the key pieces that you mentioned, even as tools at CIS or whatever, were actually brought to CIS by someone who developed them elsewhere and said, this would be more powerful for the community if it came from you guys than from our proprietary or commercial sense. And that's pretty big thinking about the industry and what the need is, and something greatly appreciated. And so, we have a couple pieces of donated IP that became mainstream activity that we support. And by the way, the folks that created it stay involved, but it becomes a CIS thing, and we bring in other people, including their competitors, to help maintain the idea on behalf of the community. You know, what they think they correctly read was that, yeah, what they realized was, again, why should we all have to solve this problem individually? Why do we all have to convince a regulator independently? Why do we have to convince a judge independently? Why isn't there a standardized way to do this? And as you know, as whatever credibility CIS has, it comes with, you know, this is an independent, transparent home of this is a pretty good way to carry the idea forward. So we appreciate the chance to work with you, and I look forward to the discussions and the connections that we'll have, you know, over the next year and longer with you and your team. So we're approaching the end of the time here, but Amelia, I'm going to give you one last shot. Any last lesson you'd care to leave for our audience about the program or what's behind it or what you saw or what we're going to do?
Last thoughts here. I mean, again, it's an honor to be part of this program. I think it's a great opportunity for organizations that are looking for some funding, right? It's an easy lift, especially those underserved communities, which is a big focus for CIS. And, you know, give it a shot. We welcome your feedback. And as we kind of talked about here, even if we're unable to award you the grant, there are opportunities to make those connections. And that's something that truly is powerful. And you're always welcome to reach out and ask questions.
Great, Amelia. George, how about you? Any last message you'd care to leave with our audience?
I would welcome if there were candidates that didn't get awarded and they want to understand how we have been successful over the last decade and a half. I'd happy to connect with anybody and help them establish a cyber technical assistance program in their community. We are a small boutique, right? There's about 19 of us here at CyberTap. We can't solve every world's problem, but we can teach other people to do it. So if you're listening to this podcast and you want to understand how you build out a cyber assistance program, preferably non-for-profit, right? We like those folks. If you're a Google Clinic and you're figuring out how to get into your community and do this work, reach out to me. You can find me on social media. Maybe my email will be tagged to this podcast. I welcome the connection.
George, that is an incredible offer. Very generous of you, and I hope that I hope you get flooded with a denial of service to allow you to create.
I probably will, but that's okay. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, it is. You know what? But this idea of that was the founding of CIS. The first 10 years of the company, Amelia, there were 6 or 7 employees that created essentially a worldwide business of benchmarks, and it was all through grassroots volunteerism. You know, community building. So that's a wonderful offer and a great way for us to end up the episode today. So, all right. So thank you both, Amelia, George. We appreciate your time and attention, and it's just been wonderful to talk about this. Again, one of the best duties that I have here at CIS, and the opportunity to work with Amelia is just a bonus. It's just wonderful. So for the listeners out there, viewers out there, thanks again. We really appreciate your time here. Always open to your suggestions for feedback, for new topics, for ideas, or just questions that you have. Please reach out to us at cisecurity.org. And with that, we'll wrap it up. Please subscribe to us in the usual ways, and we will catch you at the next episode. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.